I have four kids.
You?
Yeah, I have a 28-year-old daughter, a 27-year-old son, an 18-year-old daughter, and my 7-year-old daughter.
Wow.
And I have three granddaughters.
Wow.
Yeah, my granddaughters are 2, 5, and 6. And so it's cool because the 5 and the 6, well, they're all around the same age. So
yeah,
when they're all together, it's like so cool to watch them interact. And they're like, yeah. Auntie. And she's like, hey, nieces.
I'm super excited to be a grandma. I have a son who's 26.
Yeah.
But I'm like, don't worry. Just take your time.
Take your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when it happens, I'll be pumped.
Right on. Where's he at?
He's currently incarcerated.
Okay.
But he's getting out in 2 weeks.
Good. Good.
Yeah. It's
Where
been
at?
Like a crazy long haul.
Yeah.
He's in California.
Okay. Okay.
At Ironwood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know how it is. Yeah, I've been in and out of jail so many times. I picked up my first felony cases when I just turned 18. And ended up doing a year for that, and then a couple of years probation, and then, you know, later on down the road, when I got addicted, you know, addiction leads you to do things that you don't normally do, you know.
Yeah.
So I found myself in and out of county jail. I never went to prison.
Mm.
Never went to prison, but I did a lot of county time.
Mm.
3 months here, 6 months there, 8 months here, 4 months there, mm-hmm. 11 months there, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so I know how it is. Things happen, you know, and we all go through what we got to go through in life to get to where we're going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's life's experiences that lead us to be who we are, you know?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, it's really hard to watch your kids have to learn such hard lessons, but you,
right.
I realized through this process, it took me a while, but a couple of years ago, I finally got that spiritually speaking, it's not my business to prevent him from his own life
destiny.
Lessons and
yes.
journey. Yeah, and if I prevent it, like he definitely, there was a time frame. I mean, I had him young and then we grew up together and
right.
it was me single momming. So he got, you know, there's a codependence, a natural codependence that forms that
yeah.
then needs to be corrected.
Yeah.
And he used to think mommy would come and bail him out every time. I was like, dude, you're doing some serious shit that I have no say in anymore.
Yeah.
And you're over 18. They won't, your attorneys won't even share anything with me unless you give them permission. Like, this is where we're at now.
Yeah, yeah. And we
mommy
don't
can't call the warden.
Yeah, yeah, you can't. Yeah, definitely.
Call the principal.
Yeah,
clear it
there's those boundary lines, right? And it's such a fine line because when you cross them and you're in that new reality, it's a tough lesson, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we took it as a joke being before we were 18. I mean, we used to get in trouble too throughout high school. There was a group of us and we, you know, whatever, we didn't care.
Yeah,
you know?
Feel invincible.
We didn't care, and we'd get in trouble, and they'd send us to the principal's office. They'd call the cops. The cops would sometimes take us down to the, you know, the PD, and then mom would come pick us up, and it was like, whatever. We'd go to school, and it was like, oh, my God, you know. It was like
yeah.
you felt real cool about, you know, getting in trouble or whatever. And,
yeah.
And so it was like it almost felt like there was no consequence, right?
Yeah.
And,
if anything, it's positive. Like, you're a badass now.
Like, you're a badass now.
A good
and
thing.
You're setting, like this standard of being a badass and this reputation of being a badass.
Mm-hmm.
And people would say, when you're 18, things are different, whatever. You
mm-hmm.
know, we don't realize, whatever, whatever. And then, boom. And it's like, well, fuck. Now,
yeah.
now we know we've crossed that threshold, you know?
Well, and it is a split day, and it's a fucked up. We don't have proper mechanisms in Western society for a coming of age. And
right.
that, clearly, that was your coming of age.
Yeah.
That was my son's coming of age.
Yeah.
That's a fucked up coming of age.
Yeah, yeah.
That's no bar mitzvah.
Yeah. My brother, I mean, shit, my brother was a 2-time state champion, a wrestler in high school.
Wow.
He, you know, he maintained a 3.0 GPA. He was a tough dude. Nobody fucked with him because he was a tough dude, man. Everybody knew. But, you know, we were always getting in trouble, whatever. And then graduating high school, he had a scholarship offers to go to various places because of his wrestling talent, right? But his senior year, he went to Pittsburgh to nationals. He made it to nationals, and he hurt himself. He got a hit pointer in nationals. And so going to, like, the doctors and all that, and they told him that it was probably in his best interest not to wrestle anymore. And so he kind of let the scholarships go, and then he ended up we both, because we were, he's a year older than me. I'm 44, he's 45, and then he'll turn 46, and then I'll turn 45. So he was, like, in the first grade. I mean, I was in the first grade, he was in the second. We were always like this. We were best friends and worst enemies.
Yeah.
Right? And it was just me and him. We were raised by a single mom.
Yeah.
And my mom had us when she was young. And my dad, she had the both of us by the time she was 18. We were living in the projects here in Espanola, and my dad was young too, but my dad found it in his best interest to leave. He left to Florida when my mom was 18. I was 2, my brother was 3, and he left and never came back. And so my mom, she worked really hard and struggled to get us out of certain environments into mm-hmm. what she felt was a better environment, right? And to do that, she had to work a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And so that left me and my brother alone a lot. And yeah, and so we were like best friends, and the group of people that we hung around with, all of us, you know, hung around together, and we, you know, were of the same mentality and character a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And but after high school, after he let go of the scholarships, and then kind of life kind of started to move forward, well, he found himself in, you know, some pretty thick shit. And so we got in trouble together. When I told you that I got in trouble when I was 18, he was 19.
Mm.
And we did that year in jail together.
Oh, shit.
And then, And then when I got out, a few months later, he got in trouble in Santa Fe. He had to go back for another 11 and a half months in Santa Fe. And then when he got out of Santa Fe, when he went to court for sentencing, the judge looked at his past record and told him, like, I see that you maintained a 3.0, you were top wrestler, you did this, you did that. And then afterwards, you know, what happened? And so, you know, my brother kind of explained, but the judge said, you know, I feel like maybe you just got involved in the wrong crowds. I think that maybe you need to leave. So as part of your sentence, we're gonna kick you out of the state of Mexico for 2 years.
And oh, so interesting.
That was part of his release, right, was to leave the state of New Mexico.
But so, to go where?
So my mom got a hold of my dad in Florida. And my dad would call once every blue moon. And so we kind of knew where he was at. We had his, you know, number, but whatever. So my mom got a hold of my dad. My dad said, okay, send him down here. So my brother went to Florida, West Palm Beach. And then he was there for about maybe 6 months, and then got in trouble over there and ended up doing 4 years in prison. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And then he got out. And then he was out for about 6 months, got into a fight down here, got stabbed 13 times, and almost lost his life, recovered from that, and then ended up getting this girl pregnant with his first kid and turned his whole life around. Ended up going back to college, graduated with his associates, opened up his own business. He was married for 13 years, super faithfully. His marriage ended a couple of years ago, but it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But he flourished in life. He's an RCT up at Los Alamos National Laboratory.
That's
making
awesome.
Probably a little over $100,000 a year, you know?
My grandpa used to work up there. My dad grew up in Los Alamos.
Oh, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Small world.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I work. I work at the labs right now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go up there. It was like 26-ish years ago. It was when my son was a baby, and my dad and I took a road trip across the U.S. to visit my sister in St. Louis, and we went through, and he showed me the house that they used to live in and stuff. So
it's a beautiful drive up there. Los Alamos is like, I love driving up there in the mornings.
Yeah.
I'm a morning kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm a morning person. I love the sunrise. And so driving up there, I'm intrigued every time I drive up there. But I get up there, it's like, it's a trippy little town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could work there. I don't know if I'd be able to live there, but...
Well, it's all about the laboratory,
it's
right?
It's all about the laboratory.
It's a laboratory community.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my dad told me stories about how he and his siblings used to go and basically just, like, hang out and explore in cliff dwellings and find arrowheads all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of that up there.
Yeah.
Bandelier National Monument.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of sacred land up there.
Yeah.
You can do that, yeah.
I'm glad I have more time here. Explore some of that.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to choose. I prefer nature, but I also feel like, oh, maybe there's like a gallery I should see in here. I don't know what. I'm going to have to think about it. My priority is the interviews for sure and coordinating all that.
Yeah, and then kind of going with the flow. And, you know, like when me and you were talking today and you were saying how you go into dry camp and you kind of just live with the will, like you feel free and kind of feel empowered. And like I told you, I was homeless for 6 years. And And I had to laugh when me and you hung up and even shake my head, because I used to feel like that when I was homeless. I don't know if that sounds weird or not, but I used to feel, I mean, there was a lot of times where there was a lot of feelings when it came to being homeless.
Yeah.
But there was times where I just like felt that, because like at one point I was homeless in Florida. I went to rehab in Florida, South Florida. I stayed at the place that I was at for about a month, and then I left. I got, you know, the urge, the cravings, and I'm like, this is Florida. There's got to be shit around here, right? And so I left, and I found a connect, ended up homeless for 8 months in Florida. And I don't know. I would literally walk to a corner, and I would look around like this, and I'd be like, I guess I'll go this way. Let's go see what's this way, right? And it was, like, exciting. It was, like, an adventure, you know? But in kind of a different kind of way.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's empowering that you choose that perspective also, because it could be complete misery and torture.
And it was for some people that I would run across that were going through the same thing. Yeah, if you choose. Yeah.
But it's cool that you relate that from having personal experience, because all of us that haven't experienced that stereotype and say, that must be so terrible and horrible. But I've lived in Venice Beach, and it is fucking vacation 24/7 for people that are homeless there. There are showers on the beach. There's tons of tourists for free food all over the place, and the, you know, trash cans. I mean, and there's a I salute them. I saw them create community together, and you would need that and want that. And it's like they're doing fine. They've found their family, their community, people that look out for each other. They watch each other's dogs. They, you know, resource together. I mean, good for them.
Yeah.
People, just because they are homeless from some circumstance, or they've chosen that,
or they've chosen,
which is totally fine, to each their own.
Exactly.
It's not hurting me, I guess, unless we start talking about, like, where are my tax dollars going?
Yeah.
You know, and are there enough resources for all of us to pay for that? Like, I remember when my son was probably about 4 years old or so. I was living in Humboldt County up north, working, going to school, raising him, and this girl coming off dead tour or whatever, they would hang out up there. Or fish tour, one or the other. And I was walking down the sidewalk, and she's like, hey, want to buy me dinner? And I was like, hey, want to buy my kid groceries? I was like, put it back in her face. I'm like, you're stereotyping me. I'm the one who, I choose to have this life, and I choose to pay taxes. I choose to provide a better life for my son, because I don't want him living on the street with me. So, like, what are my choices? You know, I don't want him living in a mission, or, you know, so anyway, I was like, you know what, you're young and able-bodied, I could have chosen the same thing as
figure
you.
Figure it out.
Figure it out and empower yourself. You're capable.
Yeah.
And you don't have to grovel. And I mean, I think now that I'm talking about it.
And it's funny, because no matter where a person is at in life, everybody holds their own character, because even some of those that live homeless, whether they choose to or because it's a circumstance, even they feel entitlement.
Yes, you know? Interesting,
even
right?
They feel entitlement.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what that reminded me of.
Yeah.
Somebody walking up like that, like they feel entitled, like, hey, you know, I'm homeless, why don't you look like you have a job, buy me something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wait a minute, time out, right? Yeah, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. You know? But
we can choose that no matter where we're at in our lives, right?
People,
that attitude.
Yeah. People are intriguing. Yeah.
Or being completely like gracious and humbled and gratitude for all of the choices that we make and the things that are just presented to us. Like Erin and I just had this conversation. She's like, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, thank you, sunshine, for coming up today. You know, like it can be that simple, but having that attitude towards life. Like, I have this 86-year-old friend, Charles, that lives in Maine, and one morning I was like, how you doing, Charles? How you doing this morning? And he's like, you know what? I woke up today. It's a great day. I was like, it could be that simple.
Yeah.
Oh, we can choose to feel gratitude for anything.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like, and I laugh because that's like me. I'm a nerdy bird. 4 o'clock, 4:15 comes, my eyes open up. It's like I have this body alarm and I'm like, okay, I'm awake.
See, being in nature reprogrammed me and I was like 4 to 4:30 on the dot.
On the dot,
and I love watching the sunrise.
I love it. Oh my God, I'll go outside, I'll get up, I'll make my coffee, I'll go outside and I'll stand out there no matter how fresh or cold it is. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That time, you know,
and you start it just to makes hear me feel the animals alive. Wake up.
Yeah,
like,
you can hear
the
earth wake up almost. You know, the trees start to like move. It's like they're stretching. You know, the birds start to chirp and then the break of the light. And I'm just like, wow, look at that. This is amazing. Yeah. So now I'm like, thank you. You know, thank you, Lord, for this moment. You know, this moment in life.
Yeah, because we don't have a guarantee of anything but that moment.
That moment. Yeah.
And like, the past is gone and the future is still yet to be made.
Yeah. If we're blessed to be able to make it to the future. You know?
Yeah.
Because we're not promised tomorrow.
Yeah, we're not guaranteed anything. Yeah. No one is. And I mean, it's people forget. It's like we all know about the young person who dies in a car accident at this beautiful moment in their life, and maybe they're doing something phenomenal and sharing with the community, and you're like, why? It's not fucking fair.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, some crotchety old dude is just like dying from cancer for 10 years and just being a shithead to
everybody. Pissed off at the world.
Yeah.
Doesn't even want to live.
Right.
And you're like, what?
Can we make a trade?
In all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not for us to choose.
Nope. Yeah,
and I do kind of, I don't really know, well, part of me sometimes thinks like our souls choose how long we're supposed to be here, and that's beyond our ability to understand, like cosmically from a much bigger perspective.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And what a gift that we even know each other.
Can I go to the green park?
This one?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how fast you can get there. I'll count. One, two, three. Oh, you're fast, girl.
Six, seven.
She loves it.
Woo! She's so cute. So a seven-year-old, that was a surprise after having all older children.
It was. It was a blessing. I felt like it was my opportunity to be able to be the person that I wasn't to my first three.
Yeah.
You know? My do-over.
Yeah.
You know, my second chance. But, yeah, so, like, kind of just to, like, let you know a little bit about myself.
Well, so, do you want to get into the interview? Do you want
let's
to
do it.
Like, do you want to tell the listeners your name?
Let's do it. Yeah, so.
Who the hell are you?
My name is Ralph Martinez, and I was born and raised here in Espanola, New Mexico. I graduated from Espanola Valley High in 1996. And right after graduating, I hooked up with me and my high school sweetheart were together.
Mm.
And at the time, she had two kids, and their father, they were two and three, and their father was battling his own situations. And so I kind of stepped in to play that father role. I did get in trouble. I mentioned how I got in trouble when I turned 18. And I did a year, ended up doing a year in Tierra Maria County Jail, TE County Jail, but it was a year of weekends. That's a whole nother story.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a whole nother story. Yeah.
So, so you got to be in their life still.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was, I'd have to go. It was me, my brother, and my other friend, David. And we all got in trouble together, and so they sentenced us to a year of weekends. So we'd have to drive to TA, which is about a little about an hour north of us.
You guys are like field trip.
So we'd have to be up there on Saturday morning by 10, and then we'd get out Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they called us the weekend warriors.
It's way too easy.
Yeah, so that's what we did for a year. But so anyways, me and my ex were together for 11 years. We created a family, right? And in 2001, I became addicted to drugs, cocaine and heroin. I don't know, even before 2001, I experimented ever since high school. And so I always dabbled in it, you know, I always played around with it. But in 2001, I woke up one morning just knowing that I was addicted, right? Like, I felt like I had crossed that threshold, and I knew that just because of the way I was thinking, the way my body was feeling, the cravings that I was having, those uncontrollable urges, you know, that I just felt in the core of my soul, and I knew that I had crossed that threshold. And so in 2001, I became addicted. And at the time, my ex, she didn't do drugs. You know, she drank from time to time, but she was all about growing in the things of life, and it got to a point.
Meet my new friend.
Well, hello there. Hi. I really like that that coat you have. It looks fuzzy and warm.
Yeah.
I wear it because we had to go to a
funeral. Oh, I'm sorry. But you're here playing now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys go have fun, okay?
Okay. Nice to meet you.
Nice to what's your name?
Dalea.
Dalea?
Zalea.
Zalea.
Beautiful name. Yeah.
You're so good at making friends.
She loves them.
It's 100 million, million, 100.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's more than me.
That's way more than the both of us combined.
I've been at it way longer than you. Okay, have fun.
Bye.
They're like the same height.
They both have same color.
Dark hair. Yeah, same color.
But so my ex was all about growing in the things of life, and it got to a point where I was just doing the total opposite. And
she knew, though.
Oh yeah. She knew, and she put up with a lot of shit, and I think that I took advantage of that for a lot of years. Mm. I'll never forget the first time that I ever went out like on a really big mission, disappeared for 5 days, and at the time, you know, we only had one car. We had the two kids. Natasha, which is my 18-year-old, wasn't born yet. She was born in 2003. Mm. And so it was before that. I remember I went on my first mission. I disappeared. I took the car. I didn't care, right? I didn't care because I was on a mission. And, you know, the kids had to go to school. She had to go to work. Did I give a shit?
God.
No. All I cared about was being out there and doing what I was doing, you know. And I remember I was out for 5 days, and I remember on the fifth day when I had already drained out all my resources, no more money, no more dope, no more anything, and I'm driving back home. We lived in Velarde, which is about 15 minutes north.
Okay.
And I'm driving back home, and I'm thinking, what the fuck did I just do? You know, like, oh my God, what the fuck did I just do? And I'm thinking, that's it. She's gonna kick me out. Like, that's it. Like, I really fucked up this time. And I'm like, okay, by the time I got home, I prepared myself for that, right? And we had a 4-bedroom, 2-bath on an acre of land, you know, right by the Rio Grande River. And it was really, really nice. And so anyways, I got home that night. It was evening. I got home. I remember walking in, and her and the kids were sitting on the couch watching TV. And she gave me this look. And the kids, I can feel their energy. They didn't know what was going on. They knew something was going on.
Yeah.
But they didn't know what. I can feel their uncomfortable energy. And I looked at her, and I went straight into the room. I went into the restroom where we had our closet, and I started packing all my stuff. Started putting everything in black trash bags.
Here, let me volunteer.
Yes. And so she walks in, and she's like, Ralph, what are you doing? And I said, what does it look like I'm doing? I'm packing my stuff. And she said, why? I said, what do you mean, why? I said, look at what I just did. And she starts pulling all my clothes out of the bag, and she starts telling me, don't be a pussy, Ralph. Don't be such a fucking pussy. Like, man up, man up. And it turned into, like, her begging me to stay, which blew my mind. And, and that's the way it was, right? She had a lot of hope and faith in me.
Yeah.
She knew who I was as an individual in here.
Yeah.
And so I think she was trying to save that, right? She was trying to save that for sure. But it got to a point where I took that for granted.
Yeah.
And you know, then we had Natasha in 2003. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of hope from her and even my mom. By this time, my mom and my brother kind of knew what was going on in my life. And having, you know, the first kid of my own. I mean, I had been raising the other two as my own, but having the first of my own, you know, I think they all really hoped that that would be like a really big turning point for me. And I was too, right? I was really hoping like maybe this is what I need in life right now in order to make me snap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll never even forget, like, when she was almost due. She was almost due with Natasha. I remember I disappeared. I went on a mission. I was gone for 4 days. And the whole time that I was gone, I'm freaking out because I'm like, oh my God, I have the car. What if she's at home? What if she goes into labor? I'm like, well, she has a phone. She can call 911.
Oh,
she can call an ambulance. She can call her mom, right? She can't call.
Rationalizing.
I'm wrestling, rationalizing it, trying to rationalize it. And so anyways, I remember getting home. She hadn't gone into labor. It was a Saturday night that I got home.
No.
That Sunday, we went out for a drive, and then she went into labor that Sunday.
Mm.
Yeah. And so I was there. I was able to be there for, I was able to be there to watch. Hey, what's up, bro?
I saw your car like you had no.
Yeah, I saw you in Los Alamos today.
I had to go there to the hospital.
Yeah?
How you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I haven't seen you. Are you still part of the shelter?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
There's a change there. Hey.
Have they? I haven't. Hey. I sit on the board. Well, actually, I took a leave of absence from the board. About 7 months ago, because I'm running for office now, and so I've been focusing my attention on that. But what's going on?
Well, check this out. The thing I have about the shelter, you know, I've stopped staying there because of the things that I see that I don't like. You see, it's just it's like they cut off the food supply, they cut off the clothing supply, they cut off so many things that it makes it even harder for people, you know. And what I don't understand is, okay, I understand that They did say that they don't have a lot of donations.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on. Isn't there a reason? There's a reason why. You know, you see, they're right next to Goodwill.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not going to get a lot of donations.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
Well, Goodwill gets all the clothing donations. We get, like, I know that. We get just...
Yeah, but what happened to the food?
There's just partial. There's plenty of food.
There's plenty of...
Exactly. There's plenty of food.
You see, Rolf,
there's
now, I know you're telling the truth.
Yeah.
But you know what they say? You see, every time when people ask for food, they lie to people and they say they don't have. And you know what they do? And it's because I can tell you the truth. They say they don't have any food, and then they're going to throw all the food away. So you know what I do? I go to the trash can, I find all the food they throw away. And you know what they say?
I don't know.
So I say to them, hey, why do you guys lie to me so there's no food when I need food? You know what they say?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's expired.
Have you talked to Shannon?
I haven't actually had a chance to. I mean, I haven't actually spoke to her because I'm not sure if she has the, if she's... I don't know if she can do anything about it, but
yeah.
I need
well,
to speak to her because
she's the manager. Go talk to Shannon.
But,
you know Shannon.
Yeah, but I used to deal with Dina. But
well, yeah, Dina's gone.
Thing.
Yeah,
and
Dina's
I didn't
gone.
Know where you were at. So
yeah.
Now that I see you,
yeah.
This is what's going on. The thing is, they're not being reasonable.
Yeah.
With the supplying. Yes. Look, I get it that people got to have a certain time to be there, to stay there. That's understandable. I could totally agree with that because of safety reasons.
Yeah.
Now, but the thing is, if people come for various reasons, because being homeless, you know, it's not a guarantee to be at anywhere at a certain time. I can tell the doctor, hey, I got to be. If the doctor says I got to be there tomorrow at 9 o'clock, if he says you got to be I'm going to say, like, I'll try, you know, but it's not a guarantee, you see.
Yeah.
So for them to just cut a food supply, they can't do that, you know.
Yeah. I don't know about all that, but I'll call Shannon. And you go talk to Shannon. Tell Shannon that you talked to me. Go talk to Shannon. Touch base with Shannon, okay?
Yeah. Right. Hey, it's good to see you, man.
Good to
I'm
see you,
I'm
going to
be working on you, my martial arts.
Yeah.
Hey, you know how Michael Jackson does it slide? You the moonwalk?
Was that you dancing over here?
Yeah.
I thought it was interpretive art.
Michael Jackson does like this one. Michael Jackson slides across the stage.
Oh boy. And not in slippers like you, so
yeah.
Good job.
And you didn't lose one. So that's good.
Also like this one.
He gets down.
It's our own personal
yeah,
show right
it
now.
Is.
Uh-huh. It's very Tai Chi.
It is.
You're moving a lot of energy.
Uh-huh.
It's like my good. Well, I could also do Bruce Lee.
Is that
no
for real?
Yeah, who else can I think of to ask questions?
You ever seen The Way of the Dragon?
Let's show us.
This is from The Way of the Dragon when he's at the back of the restaurant.
Super focused. It literally is Tai Chi and modern dance.
Mixed together.
Have you ever considered the theater?
Soon.
Don't lose your
Drop
phone.
The phone.
Don't lose your phone. I got dizzy.
Cool.
All right, man. Thank you. We'll talk later. Go talk to Shannon. Okay.
Hey, the man
looked
just like Bruce Lee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
No one can do that. Except Bruce Lee.
And you.
And me.
God bless.
Yeah. Nick, we found him about 3 years ago. He came into Espanola, and he would wear nothing but a toga. And it was like, who in the world is this guy wearing a toga? Just a toga, no shoes, no, just a toga. With the rope,
Around his waist, not even.
And it was summer, yeah, and it was summertime, and it was like, who is this guy? So we'd stop, and I stopped, asked him if he needed shoes, and he was in a different state of mind. Mm. I said, oh, okay, I realize what's going on. Well, then winter came around, and he refused to put on clothes because he believed that that Jesus only wore a toga, so he only had to wear a toga.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so we had to save him. I got 3 calls that winter of a guy with a toga in the middle of a field, and so I had to take him to the hospital 3 different times. And at the time, I'm the founder of the first ever homeless shelter here in Espanola. And
what is it called?
Espanola Pathways Shelter.
Pathways Shelter.
Yeah, and at the time he was real skeptical about people. He didn't want to be around anybody. He had his own mindset going on. He didn't trust nobody, and so it took a while for me to build his trust. And then eventually the director that we had hired at the time, we had just barely opened up the shelter. Dina, the one he said I was looking for, Dina, and Dina's not around anymore. Mm-hmm. But they finally ended up being able to connect, and it took a while, but we finally got him to put on pants versus mm-hmm. the toga. And he's come a long way from
he's come
a long way. And you know what a descanso is? A descanso is when somebody, let's say somebody wrecks into a tree, and the family goes out and they put a cross there.
Yes.
That represents a memorialize their loved one, right? And we have descansos in different places, and there's 2 in town. And I got a call one time. They said, hey, this homeless guy pulled out the descansos from the ground. I'm like, from the ground? What are you talking about? And they're like, oh, there's a group of people that are ready to kick his ass. I'm like,
oh, shit.
And I knew right away. I said, well, fuck, has to be Nick. So I took off. And yeah, sure enough, and he believed, he didn't like the crosses because the cross, he believed that the cross is what killed Jesus.
Oh.
Yeah, and so he had this thing against crosses at the time. And so I had to explain to both families what was going on with this individual and where he was in his state of mind.
Dad, can me and my new friend go to that park?
Yeah.
My other friend had to leave.
Okay, go ahead. Go see if she wants to go back. Oh, she looks like she's going probably back to her parents.
I don't know. I think she's going to ask her parents.
Oh, she's going to ask her parents?
I don't know.
That's good.
Yeah, but this individual, he came along. He's come a long way. And so he's in a certain state of mind. I saw him in Los Alamos today, and I was like, what's he doing up here? Yeah, but I was at work, and I was in the work vehicle, so I couldn't stop and ask him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's Nick.
How far is Los Alamos from here?
LaSalle from here, maybe 15 minutes, but it's uphill,
yeah.
I knew he didn't
trekking?
Walk.
Yeah, right. Now
it.
He's hitching
I'm
or
guessing
something.
He's hitching a ride or getting on a bus because there's no way he could walk up there. I think maybe he did.
And he's young.
Yeah.
He looks like he's 26.
Yeah. He's a young dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he sounds like a Kiwi. Is he from New Zealand?
Where's
his accent from?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You haven't asked him?
Dina was able to get a hold of his mom.
Oh, shit.
And his mom, I think, lives in Santa Fe, but doesn't really want anything to do with him because of the way he is.
Yeah.
Because it's hard on her, apparently. And so it's a difficult thing. Yeah. So she's pretty much allowed him to go live his life. And that's what he does. Lives his life.
There was a really fucked up time in my son's life when he was choosing to be homeless, literally just black bagging from friends' houses, wouldn't be in touch with me, had no idea if he was fucking dead in a ditch on the street.
Yeah.
It is fucking awful for a mother.
Yeah. I know.
Fucking awful.
I know. I put my mom through that. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So going back, to when Natasha was born, that was a time where everybody felt like maybe that's what would help me to pivot in another direction, mm-hmm. right? And even myself, I was hoping that too, but it didn't. I continued down my road of addiction. She was born in 2003. In 2006, it got to a point where my ex just couldn't take things anymore. Mm-hmm. She had tried so much.
Well, at that point, she's enabling, right?
I failed her so many times, right? And I went on this mission. I disappeared for 2.5 months and got home. And when I got home that time, she was done. I walked in, all my stuff were in bags. And you know when you've been with somebody for so long and you can look at them in the eyes and you know them, right? And she was different.
Yeah.
When I walked in. Totally
checked
different.
Checked out.
Like, yeah, she checked out. Totally. I saw it in her eyes. And then she told me, that's it. You know, you have to leave. And by that time, for quite a few years, my mom had been telling me, like, Ralph, you're going to fuck everything up. You're going to lose everything. And if you do, don't think you're going to come to my house and do the same shit you're doing over there, mm-hmm. over here at my house. Like, I've worked too hard to have what I have and to be where I'm at for you to come in and take the way you're taking from your own family, right? And so I was pretty much already burning those bridges along the way. So in 2006, when it got to that point where my ex kicked me out, I had nowhere to go. And I remember that night when I left, when she kicked me out, I remember thinking, I wonder what took her so long.
Right? Yeah.
I remember thinking that. And it was what it was. And so I ended up under a bridge here in Espanola. And so I lived homeless for my first year underneath that bridge, And then when you get to that point in life, you just don't know how to go anywhere else but down.
Yeah.
You know? The depression, the self-pity,
yeah.
Wanting to escape reality, the shame,
guilt.
The guilt, everything, like, just really sets in, and the deeper you go, the deeper you get, mm-hmm. you know, and
you're like, this is my new lifestyle,
this
you get
it.
Adjusted to it,
yeah,
you're
you
like,
do.
I
you
don't
get a,
know how to change
you
it.
You get adjusted
now.
To it,
yeah.
In the morning, you're already thinking of what you're going to do to get your fix, and you're already planning for that, and then all of a sudden, time just starts to go by, and you're like, in this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're in this world, and so I was homeless for 6 years, from 2006 to 2012, and I lived in many different spaces, right?
How did you say
abandoned buildings. Improvise. Mm-hmm. I'd go to like some of the thrift stores in the middle of the night. People would leave bags of clothes, mm-hmm. and I'd check them to wherever my spot was, mm-hmm. and I would go through them and keep what I could, and the rest I would use as blankets if I could, or fill it up, use them as mattresses. And I had like, there were spaces I had that were like two bushes with old clothes draped over the top and a bag full of clothes that I couldn't utilize or use, and I would crawl under there, and sometimes I'd fill up as many bags as I could so I can throw them on top of me and layer them on
wow.
top of me, and that would be my my quarters, right? My
yeah,
yeah my protection against
oh,
the,
you mean
the
when
weather.
You didn't have the bushes, literally just slept under bags of
yeah,
clothing.
or like in between the bushes, and then I'd grab the bags and throw them on
wow.
top of me, and I always wanted to quit. In mid 2006 is when I went to San Diego. I actually, my brother, I had a warrant for my arrest, so my brother made sure to get me arrested at the time, and then him and my mom went and talked to the judge, so the judge sentenced me to a year in rehab in San Diego.
Mm.
And even that was funny, because when I went up against the judge said, okay, Ralph, you know, your family's here, my brother and my mom are in the back, and they've explained to me what's going on, the situation in your life, and I'm prepared to give you the max sentence today. With the charges that you have, you're looking at 6 months, and I'm prepared to give you the 6 months. But there is an alternative. If you want to go to a rehab, there's a place in San Diego called Victory Outreach, and your mom and your brother agreed to purchase you a ticket to get you there, and that's all you got to do is get on the plane and go, and you'll be taken care of. They've already made all the arrangements, but I'm going to leave it up to you. And so I'm looking at the judge, and I'm like, so what you're asking me is if I want to do 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
That was my that was my mentality, right?
Oh yeah.
And he said, "Well, if you wanna look at it like that," and I said, "I'll take the 6 months. Send me back to jail," you know. And I went back to jail. And at the time, it was crazy because at the time, at the county jail that I was at, there was a guy that was hitting with drugs so much. He was getting a lot of drugs in, and I was getting more high in jail than what I was on the streets at that time. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard that from my son.
It was crazy. I mean, I've been in jail where the drugs kind of pass through, and it's random and little portions of them. But this particular time, I'm talking like large amounts. Like, there was a guy that was getting large amounts, and it was just crazy. And so after being fucked up in jail for two weeks, I was like, at a point where I was like at a breaking point, and I called my brother, and I was like emotional, and I was like, I'm getting more fucked up in here than what I was on the streets, and I feel like I just don't want to be in here. I'm climbing up the walls, I'm freaking out. I'm like, if the judge would still let me choose to go to rehab, I'll take it. And so my brother went and talked to the judge, so they let me out, and I went to rehab. So I went to San Diego. I was supposed to do a year. I did 3 months, and then I came back and then fell off the wagon again and ended up back on the streets. And and that's where it was. I went in between 2006 and 2012. I went to rehab in San Diego. I went to rehab twice in Farmington. I went to rehab in South Florida. I went to rehab in Hernandez. And then my last rehab was in 2012. In at Oi Recovery, not too far from here. And so I went to rehab 6 different times within those 6 years, but it was a bunch of trial and error, right? I feel like during that time I was always trying to find a way to have my cake and eat it too, is what I realize now, right? Because I wanted to quit, I wanted to grow in the things of life, or I wanted to get out of that lifestyle that I was living and grow in the things of life, but I still wanted to hang on to something, right? And I was trying to figure out how I could do that, right? And there was a time, like when I got back from San Diego, I did 3 months. I was clean for 3 months, and then I was clean another month before I fell off track. And then there was a time when I went to rehab in Hernandez, and I moved in with the pastor and his wife and his 2 kids, and I helped him. He had just moved to the area, and he opened up his doors to me, and I moved in, and I helped him to build the church and start the church, and we did a lot of street ministry, and we traveled a lot. 9 months I was in his home.
Wow.
And then one morning I woke up and I felt like it's time for me to leave, and I got up, I started packing my clothes that morning, and the pastor walked in. He said, "Ralph, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm packing my stuff, it's time for me to leave." And Sister Alejandra, his wife, got up, and she went in there. She said, "Ralph, what are you doing?" I said, "Sister, I'm packing my stuff, it's time for me to leave." And she started crying. She's like, "I don't think you're ready." And I said, I feel like I am. And I left. And 2 days later, I found myself back under the bridge.
Yeah.
And when things like that happen, you feel all that, those emotions we just talked about, times 10, right?
Yeah.
And it really drags you down even deeper.
Yeah.
And but getting to a point in 2012, I feel like I learned a lot, right? I feel like I learned a lot. And then going into my last rehab, there was a lot of acceptances that I had to come to in my life, right? I accepted the fact that I was different than everybody else, and that's fine because we're all different, and that's what makes us unique, you know? And I say that because even thinking back in elementary, junior high, high school, I feel like I always tried to be somebody different, somebody who I wasn't, in order to fit in, right? To be in the in crowd, and then you find yourself in that character, and then you kind of just grow in that character, even though deep down you feel like that's not even you or whatever. And I came to an acceptance, and then even going through like all my rehabs and feeling like I would look at people and say, well, they go out and they go party, and then they're able to like advance in life, and like wanting, like feeling like that's what I wanted to do, but realizing that's what I can't do because I'm different.
Yeah.
Right? Ralph is different,
yeah.
You know? And accepting that, I accepted the fact that I was different, and that was fine. That was fine. I accepted the fact that there had to be boundary lines in my life. I was always the type that didn't respect boundaries. Mm-hmm. If you told me that I couldn't do something, I was going to do it 10 times worse just to show you that I could do it, right? And then I found myself in a fucked up place, and I was the only one being hurt. I was hurting myself.
Yes.
Right? I was hurting myself. And so I accepted the fact that there had to be boundary lines. And boundary lines are good because they keep us in between the lines, right? They keep us in between the lines on a path, you know.
Well, the path that we decide to be on, right?
The
like
path,
once
yeah.
you start saying, and this was the conclusion that my son came to. He's like, shit. Also, no boundaries. Shit. What I keep doing keeps getting my life in this situation that I say I don't want, but I keep doing the thing that causes that.
Yeah.
And
for every action, there's a reaction. Yeah.
And at that point, you do have to make a choice.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, we have to make a choice. And you could make the choice not to make the choice, but that's still making a choice. You know?
Yes.
Still making
it's
a choice.
It's choosing the other thing that
it's
you know.
It's choosing
the
other thing. Yeah.
yeah.
So either way, we're making a choice.
Yeah.
I had to come to the acceptance that life wasn't a race. And I had to come to the acceptance that I still had life to live. And mm-hmm. that was huge for me at the time. And I say that because I remember I was in 2009, I was homeless and I was living behind the Walmart here in my town in the Bosque area next to the river. And it was a space where I had these two bushes and old clothes draped over. And I remember one day I couldn't even get out of those bushes. I was hurting so bad from the drugs, the withdrawal. I couldn't move, right? I'm in there and I'm shaking and I'm hurting and I'm just going through these... withdrawals and these emotions and then the sun started to come down that day, and I remember thinking, man, I need to get up and figure something out. I need to eat. I hadn't eaten in I don't know how many days. Oof. And I need to figure out my hustle. What am I gonna do to get more dope? The sun's about to go down. If it goes down, I'm not gonna be able to score until tomorrow at some point. And it just even that thought alone is like heartbreaking for an individual going through that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I it took everything in me to climb out of those bushes and start walking towards Walmart to try to figure out whatever it was I was going to do, right? And I come from a small town, right? And so I was really embarrassed. A lot of times I wore a hoodie. Mm-hmm. And so I'd keep my head down and, you know, kind of... And I'm a small guy to begin with. At the time, I was probably like 85 pounds, 80 yeah. pounds, right? 75 even, maybe. And so, but I always wore like baggy clothes or sometimes two pairs of pants or a pair of sweats and pants or whatever I can find, right? And when you live homeless the way I was living, there's a lot of luxuries you don't have. You don't have the luxury to shower. You don't have the luxury of clean clothes, brushing your teeth, you know, things like that. There'd be times where I went months without changing my clothes, months without brushing my teeth, months without showering. So you look a certain way, you smell a certain way, you feel a certain way, right? And I remember this particular time, I got to the front of Walmart, and I remember I'm thinking, you know, what is it? What can I do? I'm trying to figure it out. And I looked up, and this classmate of mine walked out. And he walked out of Walmart, and it was him and his wife and his two kids. And when I saw them, I froze, and I kind of put my head down because I was embarrassed, right? And I'm like, and I watched them as they pushed their shopping cart across the parking lot, and it was filled with groceries, and the wife had the two kids by the hands, and I'm watching them. They get to this car, and it was a white Camry, I'll never forget, and it looked pretty brand new from where I was standing. And she was putting the kids in the car, buckling them in, and he was putting the groceries in the trunk, and I'm watching them, and I'm thinking, wow, look at Marcos, like, he looks like he's doing pretty good in life, right? He has a really beautiful wife. They have, you know, two healthy kids. They're all dressed really nice. Looks like they're doing good. They have what looks to be a brand new car. They're putting groceries in the trunk of the car, probably to go home to cook dinner. Like, what else do people do at this time of night? You know, leaving Walmart with, you know, a cart full of groceries. And I remember looking at him. And then I remember looking at myself. I remember looking at my hands. I remember looking at my feet. From my feet up, what I was wearing, what I looked like. And then I remember looking at the path that I just walked out from. I remember thinking about the space that I was staying in, the two bushes. And then I remember looking back at Marcos. I remember thinking, how the fuck am I ever going to catch up to that in life?
Mm-hmm.
How am I ever going to catch up to that in life?
Mm-hmm.
We graduated at the same time. We had the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
My decisions led me over here, and his decisions led him. Oh, but how am I going to catch up to that in life?
Mm-hmm.
And like right then, I remember feeling like I was so far behind the race of life. And even
just
that feeling,
that hole deeper.
Even thinking of that, I was like, I need to escape reality. Like right now, like, oh my
yeah.
God, that panic, right? That panic, that anxiety. I'm like, oh my God, I need to escape. So I carried that. I carried that for a lot of years, that I'm so far behind the race of life and wanting to escape that reality. And so And so in 2012, I came to the acceptance that life isn't a race, you know, and that I still had life to live, because there's so many individuals that lost their life because of the things that I was involved in, right? The drugs, right? Overdosing. I had people, you know, pass away in my arms, you know. I've had people almost pass away. You know, in my arms, I OD'd on two different occasions, mm-hmm. you know, and I was lucky to pull out of that, right? And so to come to the acceptance that I still had life to live at the time was huge mm-hmm. for me, right? And so it was all these acceptances that I did that helped me to really foundationalize myself all mm-hmm. over again, right?
What was that turning point?
There was so much. It was my kids were getting older. I had already felt like I had already been through so much. I felt like I can feel death breathing down my neck, you know? And just the thought of not being there for a lot of things that I wanted to be there in life for really scared me, you know? It scared me, and I didn't want to do that, you know? I grew up without a father, right? I grew up without a father, and growing up without a father, I always said, you know, I'm never going to be that guy. Right? I'm never going to be that guy. And then it got to a point where I was worse than the guy I never wanted to be, yeah. you know? And I'm like, how did I? And so, but I still had that craving to still. And the thing about my ex never, no matter what I was going through, no matter what I put her through, she never turned her back on me. I mean, there was times where I'd go to a payphone. There's a place called Dandy Burger, and the bridge I stayed under was right next to the Dandy Burger. I would call her, and I'd call her in tears, you know, and I would tell her, she'd tell me, Ralph, what are you doing? I don't know what I'm doing right now. All I know is I miss the kids. I miss the kids so much. And she'd tell me, Ralph, where are you at? And I'd tell her, I'm at Dandy Burger. And she'd say, okay, I'm going to get the kids together. I'll take them to go see you, right? And she would. She'd do that. She would take them to go see me. Then we'd sit outside and, you know, we'd talk. And I'd always be as real as I could with the kids according to their age and understanding, you know? But I wanted them to know the truth, you know, to a sense, right? Then I'd paint this false picture in their mind or feed them a bunch of shit, you know?
Even with as much shame and guilt you were experiencing and filth.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. And, wow. and it was cool because, you know, when I did end up in jail, like, I would write them and she would have them write me back. Mm-hmm. There was times that she would take them to go see me in jail. Mm-hmm. When I was in rehab, she would answer my calls and let them talk to me. You know, we always kept that connection. And I appreciate that from mm-hmm. her. You know, that's one thing.
She is a fucking amazing woman.
Yeah. No, for real. Because there's so many people that would have done opposite. Oh, yeah. Right? Like there's no way my kids are going to be in that lifestyle. You fucked up. You fucked me up. You know? And she never did that. She never held that. And so I appreciate that, you know, from her and allowing me to keep that connection to a point. Yeah. So.
I have a question.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is the Dandy Burger still there?
Dandy Burger? Yeah. Uh-huh.
How do you feel when you see the Dandy Burger and the bridge?
Oh, man, there's so many spots in town that I still visit from time to time. I still visit from time to time. And I visit these places, and I'll go sit in the spaces, right? And I'll allow myself to go back to that time. I'll allow the feelings that I had during that time, the thoughts that I had, the emotions that I had, to kind of come back and sit there for a minute. And then I kind of shake them off, and I let the energy of today in, right? And I smile, right? Because I know, or I feel like I said a little while ago, we'll go through what we got to go through in order to get to where we're going, and I never want to lose that essence, right? Mm-hmm. Of where I've been, right? Because I feel like anybody who loses the essence of where they've been, then they don't have no real direction of where they're going, right? We have to know where we come from in order to know where we're going, right?
And who you are now, today,
yeah,
is made from all of those experiences. And there's so much strength in choosing who you are now and what you're being. And,
right.
And even more so coming out of that. Like, most people don't have to make such insanely crucial and hard decisions just to live a quote-unquote normal life and go to the park with their daughter.
Right, right, yeah, yeah. And there's been a lot, right, that has happened from 2012 until today, right, that I'm super thankful for. And I look back and I even have to laugh. And I've always been open about where I've been and what mm-hmm. I've been through and what I've done. I'm like, gives a shit? You know, everyone goes through shit, right? Mm-hmm. And even coming from a small town like Espanola, I felt like everybody knows anyway. So what the fuck try to like hide it for, right? But I've always been open and on social media, and I'm like, whatever, you know, it is what it is.
So you said a couple of these things, but just restate for the listeners. So you opened the first ever homeless shelter in Espanola, New Mexico.
Right, right.
And you're now running for office.
Right, right.
For what?
I'm running for county commissioner.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty, yeah, it kind of blows my mind too. And again, I smile and I shake my head. And I feel like everything that I went through taught me a lot, right? And it's using those tools to better a community that I love.
Yeah.
Right? And I love my community. But the homeless shelter, the homeless shelter started in November of 2018. Mm. And the way that started was, so in 2017, I got a phone call saying that I had been nominated to be Juan de Oñate for the Espanola Fiesta festivities. So the fiestas are Northern New Mexico tradition, right? All the communities across Northern New Mexico have their own fiestas. Taos has their fiestas. Santa Fe, Las Vegas, Espanola, Peñasco, they all have their yearly community celebrations. Here in Espanola, they select somebody to play Juan de Oñate. Juan de Oñate is the individual who came from Zacatecas, Mexico in 1865 and colonized this area, right? Mm. And so they select an Oñate and they select La Reina, the queen, right? And those two individuals are pretty much the face of the community for a whole year. They travel to all the northern fiestas representing the community. Mm. They build their teams, I guess you can call them. Oñate has his cuadrilla, his army of people, and then the La Reina, the queen, builds her princesas, all the princesses, right? And we all travel together and go do all these functions. And so they called me in 2017 telling me that I had been nominated, and I'm like, what? Blew my mind, because it was way out of my norm. And it was just, I was like, who would even nominate
me? It's like your dance at prom king.
Yeah, yes, yes, yeah, to a sense.
You're like,
fuck,
homeless to prom king.
Yeah. And so.
I guess you caught up to your friend. His name is Marcos.
Marcos, yeah, yeah.
Also, let's talk about white Camry versus, what am I looking at right now?
Yeah. My little toy Hummer.
It's not little. That's a huge Hummer.
Yeah, it's a beast of gas too, man. I'm telling you. But
I'll trade you for my Prius. Yeah. Just kidding. I like my gas.
As much as you travel.
That's like a penthouse suite to me right now.
That's a good trade.
Just for the night, just for camping.
Yeah. I mean, even coming out of. My last rehab in 2012, I did the 90-day program over at OI Recovery, and at day number 60, my counselor pulls me in, and he says, Ralph, this is day number 60. I said, okay, cool, and he said, you have 30 days left. I said, yeah, I know, and he said, what are you going to do when you leave? And I said, I have no idea. And he said, well, won't your mom let you back? Do you have a place to go? And I said, well, I do have some places to go, but nowhere I really should go or want to go. And he said, well, what about your mom? Won't your mom let you back in the house? And I said, nah, she won't let me back. He said, have you asked her? I said, no. And he said, then how do you know? I said, I just know. He said, well, do you want to call her? And I said, all right, if you want. And he said, let's try it. Let's give her a call. I said, okay, cool. So he calls her up, puts it on speaker. My mom answers. And I'm like, hey, mom, this is Ralph. And she says, hey, mijito, what are you doing? I said, not much over here. I'm sitting in the office with Jose. Jose was my counselor. She knew that, right? I said, I'm sitting in the office with Jose. She said, oh, okay, cool. And I said, yeah, we're just sitting here talking. And today's actually day number 60 that I've been here. She said, oh, awesome. Congratulations. I said, thank you. I said, yeah, I have 30 days left. And she says, stayed quiet for a second. She said, Ralph, what are you trying to ask? And I looked at Jose and I smiled and I said, I wanted to ask if I could come back home when I get out in 30 days. And she said, no, you cannot come back here. She said, Ralph, you need to understand that to me, this is just another one of those times. Mm-hmm. And I understood that, mm-hmm. right? And she said, Mijito, I really do hope that you get your life together. And I really do hope that you pull out of the shit that you're in, because you deserve it and your kids deserve it. She said, but you can't. No, you can't come home. And I said, Mom, don't worry about it. I understand, right? I totally understand. So we hung up the phone, and he said, I looked at him and I said, I told you. Right? And he said, so now what? And I said, I don't know. So then I got a hold of a counselor that I had been working with here in Rio Riba County. And I had met this counselor about a year and a half before in jail. She would go to the jail to visit the jail, and that's how her and I met. And she told me who she was and the program and yada, yada, yada. So when I got out of jail, she told me, yeah, if you go to the office once a month, you can take these surveys. It's a 50-minute survey and get a $25 Walmart card. So I was like, cool, I'll go do that, right, for the Walmart card. And so that's how me and her kind of connected. She was this older lady, and I called her B. Her name was Beatrice. And so for a year and a half, I mean, I would call her, and I'd say, hey, Miss B, do you have any food by any chance? And she'd be like, where are you at, Ralph? And I'd be like, I'm at the bridge by Danny Burger, or I'm wherever. She'd take me food, and she'd tell me, whenever you're ready to change, I'm here for you, but you need to be ready. You need to be ready to do the legwork. I can't do the legwork for you, but I can help you get the... So I called Miss B, and I'm like, hey, Miss B, yada, yada, yada. I've been over here. I get out in 30 days. I've, you know, been doing good. And she said, okay, let's see what we can do for you, Ralph. She said, let's start helping you find a job so that when you get out, you can have a job. I said, cool. So she'd go pick me up, and she started taking me around Espanola to put in applications. So 2 weeks before I got out, they called me from the Giant gas station. There's a Giant gas station right up the road. They called me for an interview. I went into the interview. I told them everything, the who, what, when, why, where, and how about me, where I was at, why I was there, everything. Here's everything, right? And I was honest. And so the manager decided to give me a chance. She said, when you get out, okay, we'll give you a chance, right? And then there was this low-income apartment up on the east side of Espanola. There these low-income apartments. I went and applied, and I got accepted for a house. And I talked to the apartment manager, and I told her all the who, what, when, why, where, and how about me. Here it is. And she really appreciated that. She said, let's see what we can do to help you. So when she got me an apartment a couple days before I got out. So a couple days before I got out, I had a place to stay, and I had my job, right? That's so I would walk to work. I'd walk to work from where I was at. It would take me about 3 hours, 3.5 hours to get to work, because I would walk all the way down to the bus stop. And from the bus stop where I was closest to, it would shoot me up north to the route. But I'd go on the route, and then I'd swing back down. And then it'd take me to another stop where I had to get off and wait for another bus. And then when that bus got there, I connected with that one. And then it shot me up towards Sombrio. We did all that route. And then we shot back down. And then we went to the main bus stop, which I had to get off and wait for another connect. So then we'd connect on another bus, and then that one would take me into Santa Clara, back all the way into Hernandez to do the route. And then on the way down, it would stop and it would drop me off at my work.
How long would it have taken you to bicycle there?
To bicycle there would probably take me a lot shorter. Or walk would probably take me shorter. I didn't mind it. I had time to spare.
Yeah.
I had time to spare. And for me, I use that as a lot
of... Kept you out of trouble.
I use it as meditation time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really did use it as meditation time. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, you know. And so I did that. And then after being at the gas station for a year, I started to see bridges get rebuilt that amazed me, right, with my family.
Your relationships.
Yeah, with my family. And I was there for a year, and I had been saving little by little by little. And my brother and my mom pulled me in one time, and they said, how much do you have saved? And I told them I had $1,000 saved. And to me at the time, that was like,
yeah,
I was rich.
Yeah.
$1,000. I was fucking rich, you know? And they said, you know, we want to help you get a car. We'll each put you in $1,000. We'll match you your $1,000, and let's get you a car. So that's how I got my car, you know, my first car. And then after being at the gas station for a little after a year, I was like, okay, now I need to make some decisions. I can't fucking be at the gas station the rest of my life, you know? And I used to drive trucks before I got my CDL in 99. And so that's what I did when I was with my ex. She was a paralegal and I was a truck driver. And then I got to a point where I couldn't hold a fucking job. And then I got to a point where I just didn't have a job. I didn't have a job for like the last 2 years that me and my ex were together. You know, she carried the weight, you know? Then, so I had my CDL. I drove a lot of different things. And then in 2008, they took my CDL away, which I was homeless at the time. I didn't give a shit, right? So I'm like, okay, I need to get it back. So I had to start from the ground up again. And so I studied for about 4 months until I finally was able to take the test. I took the test, passed the test, got my CDL back. When I got my CDL back, I started looking for a job in Santa Fe. I went to like some different places, and I ran into this guy that I used to work with back in, it was like 2000, 2001, and he had climbed the ladder in the company that we were working for. So I ran into him, and he was like, "Hey, what's going on, bro?" And da da da. So we start talking, and he says, "Go visit me. Go to the office and visit me." I said, "Cool." So I went to go visit him. And he had got to a point where he was the one that did all the hiring for all the subcontractors. So he started pulling out all kinds of paperwork, showing me what the subcontractors make, which they make really good money. But you have to have your own truck, right? If you have your own truck, he can sub you out, and then you're an independent hauler for it's a cement factory. So it's those big cement trucks. Mm-hmm. And so he told me, if you buy your own truck, I can sub you out. You can make, this is the kind of money.
How much is the damn cement truck?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what? His name was Koi. We called him Koi Cowboy.
Koi Cowboy.
That's good. Yeah. And I told him, I was like, "Hey Cowboy, like, I really appreciate this. I'm working at the Shell gas station, you know, I don't have a penny to my name, my credit is shot, you know, like, I'm trying to like reestablish, but if it ever gets to a point where I could do that, can I come back and talk to you?" And he's like, "My door is always open to you, Ralph." I said, "Cool." So a couple weeks later, we're at my mom's eating dinner. My brother says, "How's the job hunting going?" I said, "Pretty good. I went here, I went there." I said, "Oh, you know who I ran into the other day? Remember Koi Cowboy?" And he's like, "Yeah." So I start telling him the story. So by the time I'm done, my brother's looking at me. And by this time, my brother had already went through what he went through and was already doing good. He had already opened up his business. He had already been doing really good in life. And so my brother told me, "What if I co-sign a truck for you?" And I'm like, "Bro, I am not asking you to do that." He said, "I know, but I'm telling you, like, what if I co-sign a truck for you?" He said, "Ralph, you know the business. You know how to operate it." He said, "And I have the ability to help you out. What if I..." And I said, "I don't know, bro. I need to think about that." Like, it was huge at the time. Like, that's when I really saw the bridge get repaired with me and my brother. Because even though my brother went through all of his stuff in life, he got to a point where he turned around, and then he saw me go through a really bad time, and I burnt him a lot, you know, during that time that I was. And so, anyways,
but he also saw you bring yourself out of it.
Yeah, and that's
long
what
enough
he
to know that you'd be dependable.
That I would
for that.
Be dependable, yeah. And so we talked about it. Long story short, we ended up buying a truck, and I opened up my own business in Santa Fe. It was called Martinez Trucking, and so I had the business for about a little over 2 years. And then some guy from Denver popped up one day and wanted to buy the business and take it to Denver. And so he just came knocking on my truck. And I was sitting in my truck waiting to get loaded, and there was like a knock on my door. And he was like, "Who does this truck belong to?" And I said, I hit the door because it said Martinez Trucking. I said, "You're talking to him. It belongs to me." He said, "I really love it. We had a cool truck. We had a really cool Kenworth. It was a 2005 Kenworth. It was pearl white. They had chrome. Everything was chrome. The rims, a big old cement truck with a big old thing, but all the rims were chrome. The whole bumper was this big old chrome bumper. The stacks were chrome. The sun visor was chrome. The water tank was chrome. The whole inside was all, it was all wood grain. It was a chrome like fire like steering wheel with the wood grain steering wheel, and all the switches were chrome with little jewel. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, truckers are really into their trucks.
They are, yes.
Like,
yes.
The lights these days are, and all the little, like, what are those, like, yarn bobbles that they're dangling off of the fucking bumpers. Yeah. I'm like, what's next?
Yeah, no, they do. Truckers really get into it, and they can fix them up really nice. And the one that we found, it was nice. So the guy was like, "I really love your truck." And I said, "Thanks." He said, "Here's my card, and this is who I am, and I'm looking to purchase some trucks, take them back to Denver, because Denver is, and it probably still is, booming in that industry." Mm. And I said, he said, "Would you consider selling it to me?" And I'm like, I hadn't even thought about selling, but let me think about it, right? So I talked to my brother, and my brother's like, "That's your puppy. You do what you want with it." So I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe this is a sign, right? It can kind of happen out of the blue. I wasn't even considering, and now the opportunity is there. Maybe there's something different for me, you know? So anyways, long story short, I sold it to him, and then I started building my house. 2015, I started building my house. And then shortly after I started building my house, the opportunity at the laboratory came up. So I jumped on board at the laboratory. I've been there since 6.5 years at the lab. And built my house, finished it in 2016, moved in 2016, and so I've been in my house since 2016.
So you took the money from the cement truck and built a house with it, but yeah. You got out of the trucky business?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
What do you do at the lab?
Now I'm a material management support. I work for the shipping division, and I support the management team in just different ways, you know?
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
So you traded a cement truck for a Hummer.
For a Hummer, pretty much. I traded one big crow. Truck for another one. Yeah.
Sorry to bother you, Ralph. Yeah. Sorry to bother you. Hey, you ever seen the Drunken Master?
No. The Drunken Master.
God bless you, Nick. Oh, boy. Didn't lose the phone this time. So it sounds like he's not going to the shelter tonight.
He will definitely keep us entertained all night.
Yeah. Lacks the attention. Don't
yeah.
blame him.
Yeah.
What do you think he's on?
Meth.
Oh.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They all have similarities. It's so weird. You can tell someone who's on coke from... I could tell someone who's on coke from a mile away. I could tell someone who is on heroin from a mile away. I could tell someone...
From personal experience?
Yeah.
Or also observation of somebody?
Well, a personal experience and observation of knowing what it does to you, because it's all different characters.
Effects.
Yeah, it's all different.
But it's not the same for everyone, right? Because it's a person's chemistry also interacts differently.
Well, when somebody does coke, you can see the characteristics. There's certain characteristics that come with doing that drug. There's certain characteristics that come with doing, you know, all different types of drugs. And it's
I'm
about
not familiar with meth, and I just saw his nose running and how he's all hyped up, so I assumed it was coke, but also I'm like, there's no way you can afford that.
The meth takes a person's mind to a whole.
Hey, I'll catch you later, man.
Hey, take it easy, bro. Go talk to Shannon.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask her if you went in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, at least he's getting exercise.
No, for sure.
Well, how can we paint this picture better?
There's a positive. There's a silver lining in every dark cloud. Yeah.
So here's my interview questions.
Okay.
You answered the first one.
Okay. Let's move on then.
No, actually, you led the interview yourself by essentially sharing quite a few things. I think it would be relevant to tell the listeners. I always ask... describe our environment right now because people can hear background noise and maybe they've surmised what it is, but where are we right now?
Our environment, we're at the park. We're at a local park here in Espanola, and there's three different play areas around us and two different baseball fields. There was two baseball games going on when we got here. Now there's one. They're probably trying to wrap it up. And there's a few people left in the park, a few kids, and
And it's almost totally dark now.
And it's almost totally dark. They just turned on the lights of that second baseball field, and if it wasn't for those lights, it would probably be pretty
almost pitch black.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
dark.
There's the last part of the light
of
blue
the
sky
light.
Over there, which
yep.
is look at that gorgeous transition.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's one thing about New Mexico, it's the beautiful skies.
I know. It hit me years and years ago. That's what Aaron and I were talking about. The electricity here just blows my mind. Like, the expanse we were talking about. And but there's some kind of, I mean, also then, like, the crazy lightning then doesn't even have to be thunderstorming or raining. It can just be, like, that electricity.
Yeah.
Something very special here.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, you know, I grew up here, and so a lot of times you become immune to your environment,
yeah.
You know? And so I really didn't know anything else besides what I saw, and it wasn't like I didn't know any better. I would see people, I remember growing up, I'd see people taking pictures of, like, the mountains or the sky, and I'd be like, what are they taking pictures of? That's so weird, right? To me, it was so weird. Then it was actually when I got back from Florida that I really appreciated what, you know, the environment, the skies, and the natural beauty that New Mexico holds. I was like, wow, it all makes sense now.
It's good to be taken out of your space, right? To develop an appreciation for what you take for granted.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, this will be a four-hour interview if we go through these, so I'll ask you a couple of choice questions. If you met your younger self as you were first starting out,
I'd whoop his ass.
Journey. Yeah, what would you tell him?
I would tell him to think before he acts on a deeper level than what I know he's thinking of right now, you know? And to really appreciate the things that he has, and to focus on the decisions that he's going to make and think about the outcomes of those decisions, right? Yeah.
Or, I mean, do you think that our younger minds are capable of that?
If
they were, would we do that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I really
we
don't.
Have to
yeah,
go
no, I think if I went in the past and told myself that, I think my younger self would look at me and say, whatever,
yeah.
Right? Whatever, right? Because that was my mentality back then. Whatever, you know, people used to tell me, people I respected, you know, would tell me things. And I'm like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, not really taking it in or taking for granted that I was smarter than that or tougher than that or, you know, and not realizing the power of the things that I got myself into.
So maybe there's some self-confidence that needed a little boost then.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And if you
I
had a whole...
I think that's safe to say, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and isn't that true for most kids? Shit, I'm still learning that.
Same here, yeah.
If you had a whole other lifetime after this one, would it change the way you're doing this now?
If the question is, would I change anything in my past? If I had to do it over again? No, definitely not.
Because of who you are.
Because of who I am now and what I know and what I appreciate, right? In the level of all of that. Right?
Yeah.
If I had not gone through whatever I went through, I wouldn't be who I would be someone somewhere.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be who I am right now.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite saying or quote or mantra?
I guess I always say we all go through what we got to go through in order to get to where we're going in life. I find myself saying that quite often, so I guess that would be it.
Yeah. That's perfect for what we were just talking about.
Uh-huh.
We do.
Yeah.
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 Cool. So. Thank you so much for this. It was so nice to get to know your entire life story. Just like that.
At Nick's.
Yeah, and Nick, thank you for contributing. Also, that was kind of perfect timing.
Yeah, it was.
To contribute to the context of your story. And also the fact that he essentially goes to your homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And he struggles with the same things that you did.
Yeah. I still run across people that are going through the struggle that were going through the struggle when I was there. People that I shared space with, you know? And it's funny because sometimes they'll look at me and they'll be like, no, for reals, how did you do it?
Wow.
You know? Like if I'm holding the secret to sobriety or something, and I'm like, it's a decision.
Yeah.
You know? It's so easy, it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Right? It's so easy that it's hard.
Yeah.
But it all boils down to making the decision, right? But it's cool to be able to have that connectivity.
Yeah.
Right? Because with that connectivity builds trust. People trust you, you know,
when
you tell them things. And just knowing that they've been there and they've done that, right?
Yeah, it's not just someone talking out of their ass, like.
Yeah,
I
read
it
in a book one time, you know, and it's like, you know,
I actually watched you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
And it's so beautiful to simplify it, and whether that makes sense for them now or not, because everyone has their time, right? Like, there were things definitely that happened for you.
Yeah.
Like, even being able to get a job and being able to get an apartment and sticking with taking a fucking 3-hour bus ride to get to your job, and then, like, appreciating that from a different perspective and not being like, fuck this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, any of those things could have fallen apart and landed you back under the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Had I made that choice, and it would have just taken one wrong choice, and it still could, you know, if I make that one wrong choice. That's the power of life, right? But, I've been a community activist for the past almost 5 years. Within those 5 years, I've helped to bring over $2.8 million into my community for services and supplies on many different levels, when it comes to seniors, when it comes to youth, when it comes to education, things like that. Like right now, like you saw all the smoke when you drove into Santa Fe and Espanola.
No,
could
but
you tell that it was smoky?
Oh, actually, yeah, a little
it's
bit.
It's smoky,
in the
super
distance,
smoky.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's some huge fires happening up
east
north,
of us,
east
right?
of us.
Yeah.
The Calf Canyon and Hermit's Peak fires. Over 200 homes have burned, and thousands have been affected. And like right now I'm doing this big gathering where we're doing donations, right? We're collecting donations. We've been for the past 4 days, and I'll be collecting donations all the way up until Monday. And we already have this big enclosed trailer full of stuff that I'm getting ready to take up there to go donate. So it's about seeing the need and being able to just act on the need, you know.
I see why you didn't tell Nick that that's where all his food
was. Yeah, right. in the enclosed trailer.
Don't tell him. Don't break into it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But filling those gaps. Now I'm running, like I told you a little while ago, I'm running for county commissioner. And
amazing.
It's just,
congrats.
it's a whole different level of leadership in being able to advocate for my community in a whole different way, right?
Yeah.
I believe that everything starts from, when it comes to change in a community, it starts from the
top down.
It starts from the top down, because they're the ones, they're our voice, right? And I look forward to being that voice for my community, because my community deserves it, right? Every community deserves, you know, good things. And so
I'm just thinking right now, like, how big you are and how proud you are in the way that you're speaking about this, and how within the same community, just minutes ago, it feels like we were talking about how very low you were in such a hole that you couldn't crawl out. And it's like, that's a huge shift.
Quite.
But you're the same person.
And life is good.
Yeah, life's great.
Yeah. So.
Fucking happy to be alive.
Yeah, I know, right? I think I'm gonna go get this little one.
Yes,
I can see her,
it's chilly
over there. Yeah.
Thank you again, Ralph.
Yeah. No, you're welcome. Thank you for traveling all this distance, and you know, just to be able to talk to individuals like me—that's fucking, that's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.